हरे
Vaishampayana continued, when that scorcher of foes, namely Keshava, a pure soul and eyes like lotus petals, heard that the foremost of the Pandavas, namely Arjuna, had reached his own excellent city of Indraprastha, he came thither accompanied by Rama and other heroes and great warriors of the Vrishni and the Andaka tribes, by his brothers, sons, and many other brave warriors. Soren came accompanied by a large army that protected him. There came with Soren that oppressor of foes, namely the exceedingly liberal Akrura, of great intelligence and renown, the generalissimo of the brave Vrishni host. There also came Andadrishti of great prowess, and Uddhava of great renown, of great intelligence, of great soul, and a disciple of Brihaspati himself. And there also came Satyaki and Shalyaka, Kritavarman and Satvata, Prajumna, Samva, Nishta and Shanku, Charudeshna, Jili of great prowess, Vipritu also, Sharana of mighty arms, and Gada, the foremost of learned men. These and many other Vrishnis, Bojas and Andakas came to Indraprastha, bringing with them many nupatal presents. King Yudhishthir, hearing that Madhava had arrived, set the twins out to receive him. Received by them, the Vrishni host of great prosperity entered Kandavaprastha, well adorned with flags and ensigns. Okay, so where are we now? What has just happened? Yes.
Arjuna had just kidnapped Subhadra Devi.
He just kidnapped her, just a second, right? Okay, and then?
He brought her to Indraprastha?
He brought her to Indraprastha. He just kidnapped her and went off to Indraprastha. Like that. Everyone agrees with that? You all agree with that? No? He didn't take her back, wasn't invited back to Dwarka, and they had the wedding and then everything, and then they went. Okay. So now they've gone back so after the wedding at Dwarka, now they've gone to Indraprastha. Having reached there, then we see then Keshava, and then he sets out with his party. And then they start to come. And then all the big Vrishnis and Andakas and Bojas, then they all have come. And then they're sent out, they're received now by the twins. Okay? So why the twins?
Because Yudhishthir belongs to the Sun Dynasty and they're higher than...
Yes, so they're Moon Dynasty, he's Sun Dynasty, so therefore they're junior, like that. Also, it's very formal. If Krishna himself was just coming, then you'd see they'd all go out. But now it's very, very formal. This is all like family relationships and all. So therefore, then the younger brothers go, they greet, but somebody goes out, right? It's not just, oh, let them come in on their own. No, still it's personal, like that. See, this is even great formality, the personal can never be lost, right? You lose the personal, you lose the whole thing, right? In other words, doing something just because it's more efficient, but you have to decide on your efficiency, what does that mean? If efficiency means getting an external observable object done at the loss of a relationship, then you can't call that practical, right? Because human beings are meant to interact with other human beings, right? The idea to develop that love for Krishna. So that means ultimately nothing should be done that interrupts your service to Krishna or your relationship with Krishna. Does that make sense? Observable objects, that's the easy part, right? Krishna, with a spark of his splendor, makes this world, right? So that's observable. That's easy. Then he comes to just set the rules and that straight. That's also easy. What he comes for is to interact with the devotees. Right? So you always remember that when you're making a decision about establishing some rule or establishing some observable result, that it's always junior to the relationships. Right? That doesn't mean that it's sentimentally you lose your standards. No, you maintain your standards, but you maintain, but you keep the relationship. Does that make sense? Right? In other words, what's observable, the result, it sits there, dead matter, that's nice. Right? More important than that are the rules by which you're going to deal with that dead matter. But more important than that are the relationships, why you have that dead matter. Does that make sense? Right? That's how Krishna works. So if you don't work like that, oh, we're just, you know, establishing rules, we have to set the example, we have to set example for what? Right? If in setting the example, then it doesn't give the right result. The devotees break down the relationships. Right? Does that make sense? Think of it. In history, any time they went to set the example, that's when they started the war. Right? When they were just disciplining people, then it worked. When they set the example, that's when the people rose up and defeated them. If you think about it. Because the point is, relationships more important. Does that make sense? Otherwise, so many examples have been made, and so many people needing to be made example of are still coming. It's relationships that keep everything in line. Right? Does that make sense? Only if someone doesn't have any relationship, then you can deal more strongly, because you have to show that relationship's more important. Therefore, there can be stronger chastisement. So they understand that they've disturbed relationships, therefore it's a big problem. Does that make sense? Okay? Received by them, the Vrishni host of great prosperity entered Kandavaprastha, well adorned with flags and ensigns. The streets were well swept, watered, and decked with floral wreaths and bunches. Why swept and watered?
The dust.
Yeah, it keeps down the dust, right? It's also, how do you purify ground?
Sprinkling and sweeping.
Right? Sprinkling water and sweeping. So then by saying that it's well watered and swept means that it's clean and purified, right? Floral wreaths and bunches. So then they would make nice. So this idea of these, you know, garlands and all these things, and then bunches of flowers. So this is an old thing. It's not some modern idea. These were again sprinkled over with sandalwood water that was fragrant and cooling. Right? So two different things. You purify and then you do the other thing, right? You're not trying to figure out what's the easiest way to do something. So it's like this. You do, each has its own thing. One is purifying, one is cooling. Every part of the town was filled with the sweet scent of burning aloes. And the city was full of joyous and healthy people, adorned with merchants and traders. Right. So merchants and traders, what does that mean? Why would you say the city's adorned with merchants and traders, right? In the Japanese society, merchants and traders are considered scum. They're on the bottom of the list, right? They're worse than farmers. So why would they be here? We'd be saying that the town is adorned with them.
Very prosperous.
Yes, right? Does that make sense? Mm-hmm. So if it's not prosperous, there's not going to be any merchants and traders. So that shows that the place is very, very opulent, right? Plus, merchants and traders always, because they have to sell something, it has to look good. So they look good, their stuff looks good, their presentation is good. So in that way, it makes the place very nice and festive, right? Sometimes you just go for a walk. You go to not where the banks are, but, you know, where shops are and that. And it's very festive, colorful, very bright, light, lots of energy. Does that make sense? Okay. That best of men, namely Keshava of mighty arms, accompanied by Rama and many of the Rishnis, Andukas and Bojas, having entered the town, was worshipped by the citizens and Brahmins by thousands. At last, Keshava entered the palace of the king, which was like unto the mansion of Indra himself. Beholding Rama, Yudhishthira received him with due ceremonies. What would be a due ceremony?
Like
What would be the most important?
Argya.
Argya, yeah. It means washing feet, this, that, they'll do. But Argya is then for very elevated. For Vyasadeva shows up, Krishna shows up, Narad Muni shows up, you get out the Argya. Right. The king smelt the head of Keshava and embraced him. Govinda, gratified with the reception, humbly worshipped Yudhishthira. He also paid homage unto Bhima, that tiger amongst men. Yudhishthira, the son of Kunti, then received the other principal men of the Vrishni and Andhika tribes with due ceremonies. Why did Yudhishthira smell his head? Yes, because Yudhishthira is senior, right? Someone is senior, then they embrace them, they smell their head. Because generally, it works out very naturally because the junior is generally shorter than you. I mean, here they're grown up, but like kids, they're shorter than you. So when you give them, when you embrace them, naturally their head's down, you smell their head. Like that. Does that make sense? Like that. Of course, Bhima, that's another story. Right? Yeah. So, yeah. Okay, so you see here is that also, even though they're junior, still they are who they are, right? Because accomplishment is something, I mean, one is natural position. You know, someone walks in, he's God, okay, then it doesn't matter. You know, even he's 3 foot tall, like that, you know, he's given the proper reception. But, so, everybody is respected for what they have, what quality they have that's respectable, right? So Yudhishthira is respected because in relationship, he's senior, right? Also in influence, right? At least in the material world, he's senior. So therefore, that is given, right? And in age, he's senior. But at the same time, Krishna and them, they are very special, so therefore they're worshipped by the Brahmins because here's the Supreme Lord. Right? Does that make sense? So, and we see these persons are great, great, powerful people. Even though they're taking the junior position of the moon, as the Moon Dynasty, it doesn't mean that they're not powerful. There's no one that can defeat them. Right? There's no one that can defeat them. Right? Does that make sense? Like that.
The saving contradiction that comes out, that comes from relationship.
That comes from relationship. The contradiction, because human being means contradiction, right? Demon, straightforward. Demigod, straightforward. Human being, mixed. Does that make sense? Demigods, it's always. Everything's nice, everything's great, everything's happy, you know, and like that. Does that make sense? The demons, and they have their own, you know, path. But human, it's mixed, right? It's a mixture between happiness and sorrow. That's what makes the human being unique. Now, of the demon, the demigod, and the human, which form does Krishna, which culture does he follow?
Human,
right? He doesn't follow demigod culture. He follows human culture. Right? Of course, supreme human culture means transcendental. Does that make sense? So this is the normal state. This is the highest state. Otherwise, we'll think the demigods or the Brahman platform or something, you know, it's always happy or there's no pain or like that. Does that make sense? But that's not the point. The point is the that balance between those who can't handle the balance, Vaikuntha is for them. Vaikuntha, no disturbance, no pain. It's always a festival. Right? But in Vrindavan, then it's greater than that. Right? We just read that Krishna says that his mind is more attracted to the sulkiness of the gopis when they approach him and they're upset with him, then by hearing all the nice prayers of the Vedas and everything like that, that, you know, he receives in Vaikuntha. Right? So this is special. So it's one of those things that relationship means it has this variety, this changingness. Right? Does that make sense? It's very important to accommodate this. If you don't accommodate this, you'll always be unhappy. Right? Because at best, things are 50-50. Right? Yes.
How can we apply that in relationship with devotees?
How do we apply that with devotees?
If devotee gets like upset, then it would be considered as a Vaishnava parada.
If we get upset, or they get upset,
or the other party, or
means if they get upset,
yeah, both of them.
If they're being upset, that is Vaishnava parada.
No. Well, like if one does something which they don't.
Or you do something that upsets them. Is that Vaishnava parada? You should work it out. There's a story, I forget who it was. Yeah, I think it was Rupa Goswami. Rupa Goswami was there chanting his japa, and he was seeing this whole pastime of Krishna like that. You know, it's just like the transcendental pastime just manifests so he can see them. And at that time, there was one Vaishnav. He wasn't very so advanced necessarily, but he was just, you know, one of the Vaishnavs in Vrindavan. And but he had, I think he had some kind of funny physical deformation, either difficulty in walking or, you know, something was there, so that it was, the common person would think it would be amusing. So just as he walked by, because he can't tell Rupa Goswami is seeing all the pastime, so just at that time, then Krishna was holding down this branch. Radharani said, pull the branch down so she can pick the flowers and all that. And he pulled it down. So she grabs the branch, goes to catch a flower, and then Krishna let it go. So then Krishna, Radharani's going up in the air with the branch, like that. So then, you know, Krishna's laughing, and all the gopis are, you know, quietly laughing. And Rupa Goswami started to laugh. So then this devotee thought, Rupa Goswami's laughing because he's seeing, you know, my deformity, and he's thinking this is amusing. You know, and then he was upset because what is this? Is Rupa Goswami is the senior most? How is it he's thinking like this? So just at that time, that devotee, you know, went by, and Rupa Goswami's, you know, vision of ecstasy disappeared. And so he got very upset, and he was wondering what happened. And no matter how much he meditated and chanted, it wouldn't come back. So he was discussing this with Sanatana Goswami, and he said, well, did you offend somebody? Did you do? He went through anything that could possibly do this, you know, it's just sadhana, like, no, everything's fine. So it says, but, you know, but you don't know, I don't see anybody, I don't know who is happening. So he said, okay, do one thing. You organize a feast, big feast, invite all the Vaishnavas in Vrindavan, right? And then you see who doesn't come. Then you know that's the person. So then he fed everybody nicely, then worked out who didn't come. Then Rupa Goswami went to that devotee. And then ask him, you know, if he had offended him in any way. So that devotee revealed how he was walking by. And, so he was walking by. He saw Rupa Goswami laugh like this. So then Rupa Goswami explained how actually he was seeing this pastime, explained the pastime. And how he had laughed at that. So, but he said it in all, you know, it wasn't like, you know, hey, I was doing this, what do you think? You know, it was like very humble and all that, very nice, you know, so that he would appease that devotee. His point is, if it's operata, it doesn't matter what's the position, right? It's just, it has to be removed. So then he explained that, then that devotee seeing this also, then he had the proper mood, so then he understood, he became very humble, he forgave him and everything. And so then everything, you know, became nice, and then the pastime came back, but this time both of them could see it, like that. So that's what you're dealing with. Because you have to remember, for Krishna, the only thing that has any value in the cause of creation is relation with devotees. Nothing else. We may say, this person's this, one's that, this one did this, that one did that. It doesn't matter. Krishna doesn't look at it that way. The only one looking at it that way is you and all the other neophytes. You know? That's it. The Uttams don't look at it that way. Krishna doesn't look at it that way. His associates don't look at it that way. The Uttamas don't look at it that way. The Madhyamas don't look at it that way. The only way people look at it that way are the neophytes. Because for them, material world is very important, though they'll say it's all Maya. But it still has strong impression and strong samskar for them. So therefore, they actually take it as more powerful than the devotional process and the chanting of the holy name. Right? Therefore, someone does something, breaks some rule, the reaction for it is very great because they actually feel that it has more potency than the holy name. Right? You understand? But it's common. Like that. In India, it's just because they take morality, because that's the strong platform, because in morality, then you have justice, you have economics. So the majority of people are absorbed in money and needs, so therefore morality is very important to them. It'll be more prominent than devotional service. Devotional service is something they're adding to their life and they're trying to make more prominent, but it hasn't necessarily. You know, in the West, then, you know, philosophically, then they have the devil, which is you know, basically separated from God, independent from God, does things as he likes, so he's very powerful. So these concepts are natural, mundane consciousness, but they have nothing to do with philosophy or spirituality. I mean, in other words, they're not devotional at all. Somebody is corrected for something wrong, that's there, but not at the expense of devotional service. As soon as you restrict devotional service, means you're not looking at it from a devotional platform. In fact, if we really wanted to be strict, we could question if you are even a devotee. You know, what's your faith in the holy name? One holy name can clear the sins of the universe. And I don't mean one pure chanting. That's not what the Shastra says. The Shastra says one name, in Nama Bas. Right? Okay, yes, that means a pure name. No, it doesn't. Right? Ajamil. How pure was Ajamil when he was chanting his son's name? And what was he thinking of? His son. My son, please come. I might die, or I am dying. I want to see you. You're the youngest son. I'm most attached to you. That's what he was thinking. And for that, the Yamadutas were stopped. The Vishnudutas came. Right? So all this Western, modern concepts of the seniority of morality over bhakti is complete nonsense. It's not accepted by any of the acharyas. But having said all that, it's extremely popular amongst the devotee community. Extremely. But having said that, it doesn't mean that it's still not 100% nonsense. So this is the point. You have to make your choice. Do you want to take devotional service as superior? Then you can understand all these fine points of Vedic and Vaishnav culture, where everybody can be senior at the same time. There's hierarchies within respectability. Right? Or you can stick to your mundane, modern things and stay here in the material world. That's your choice, basically. You don't really have much else, because Krishna doesn't give much else. You don't like the devotees, Krishna doesn't, you know, will not reciprocate nicely with you. Does that make sense? Yes?
With Rupa Swami, what the Sutta Soul though understands that there was a mistake made. Why was
Super Soul understands, but the whole point is understanding enough? What does it mean? When you say something that's correct according to intellect, and your wife says you don't understand, you get upset because intellectually you understand. But why is the fight there? So what is higher, the intellect or the feelings and the emotions that are expressed and felt between persons? Does that make sense? So you're wrong because your mood was wrong. That's why you're wrong. That's why you don't understand. Because you're looking at it intellectually, not in the personal way. Does that make sense? So when it comes to the personal, that's the whole point is the interaction with devotees. Otherwise, Krishna sits in the heart, knows everything, so what? But Krishna in Vrindavan, you know, he's thinking he's son of Mother Jashoda, right? You could say, well, he knows he's not. You know what I'm saying? So where would the rasa be? So Krishna knows, but the whole point is it's that interaction between the devotees. Because you see, by Rupa Goswami properly following, and that other devotee properly following, then now you had somebody who was just one of the devotees in Vrindavan, now he's seeing the ecstatic visions that Rupa Goswami is seeing. Right? Not bad. Otherwise we could have just gone on, yeah, well, the Lord knows. And does that make sense? So that's the thing, is Krishna has pastimes. He is God, he knows it. But that's not what it's interesting. The interesting thing is to interact with the devotees. Right? That's why forgiveness, that's why all these things are most important. Does that make sense? Yudhishthira, the son of Kunti, then received the other principal men of the Vrishni and Andaka tribes with due ceremonies. Yudhishthira reverentially worshipped some as his superiors and welcomed others as equals. Some he received with affection, and by some he was worshipped with reverence. Then Hrishikesh of great renown gave unto the party of the bridegroom much wealth, and unto Subhadra he gave the nuptial presents that had been given to her by her relatives. Right? In other words, she didn't have to drag him along with her. Right, so she'll get stuff. Notice that it mentions both of these. Why would it mention what Yudhishthira's gifts and Subhadra's gifts?
Let's give it to the wife, belongs to her, not to the husband.
Yeah, because the woman's wealth is separate. So those things that are given before marriage, those things that are given at the nuptial ceremony, those that are given, during all this, the ceremony surrounding that, anything given out of affection, all these things belong to the woman. They're not the husband's. Like that. That means the wife can use them for the husband as she sees fit, but the husband can never think separately that this is mine, I can use it. Like that. Does that make sense? So that's consideration is there. Therefore, the one is now, they're the family, they're the senior family, there's the boy's side, so that's senior to the girl's side, so presents for the family. But then there's the presents for Subhadra. Krishna gave unto the Pandavas 1,000 cars of gold, furnished with rows of bells, and unto each of which were put 4 steeds, driven by well-trained charioteers. Cars of gold, right? Not tin and rubber. Okay. He also gave unto them 10,000 cows belonging to the country of Mathura, and yielding much milk, all of excellent color. Well pleased, Janardhan also gave them 1,000 mares with golden harnesses and of gold white, of color white as beams of the moon. He also gave them 1,000 mules, all well trained and possessing the speed of the wind, of color white with black manes. And he of eyes like lotus petals also gave unto them 1,000 damsels, well skilled in assisting at bathing and at drinking, young in years and virgins all before their first season, well attired and of excellent complexion, each wearing 100 pieces of gold around her neck. Right? These are the maid servants, right? 100 pieces of gold, okay? And skins perfectly polished, decked with every ornament, and well skilled in every kind of personal service. Right? So these are the maid servants, so you can understand what the queens must have been like. Janardhan also gave unto them hundreds of thousands of draft horses from the country of the Vahlikas as Subhadra's excellent dower. That foremost one of Dasara's race also gave unto Subhadra as her peculium. Is that how you say it? Peculium means private property. Right? So here they mention 10 carrier loads of first-class gold possessing the splendor of fire, some purified and some in the state of ore. 10 carrier loads of first-class gold. Okay. So that's a lot of gold. So it's like one man can carry about 70 kilos. I mean, that's now. So 10 of those, that's, you know, like probably 1,000 kilos of first-class gold. So. I see some smiles from the back there. I like it. Yeah, okay. Hear that. Okay.
You like Fort Knox.
Yeah, and that's her own private. Now you can understand what Yudhishthira's got, you know. So Rama, having the plow for his weapon, and always lovingly brave, loving bravery, okay, gave unto Arjuna as a nuptial present 1,000 elephants with secretions flowing in 3 streams from the 3 parts of their bodies, each large as a mountain summit, irresistible in battle, decked with coverlets and bells, well adorned with other golden ornaments, and equipped with excellent thrones on their backs. That large wave of wealth and gems that the Yadavas presented, together with the clothes and blankets that represented its foam. I'm not quite sure how this sentence holds together, but whatever. So he's given clothes and blankets. Oh, that represented its foam.
The wife of you.
Okay, now I get it. Okay. So in other words, you have this great, this large wave of gifts. So of this wave of gifts, then the clothes and blankets represented its foam, the elephants its alligators and sharks, and the flags its floating weeds, swelling into large proportions, mingled with the Pandava ocean and filled it to the brim, to the great sorrow of all foes. Yudhishthir, right? Now it's the personal, you have to bring in everybody, right? Yeah. Yudhishthir accepted all those presents and worshipped all those great warriors of the Vrishni and the Andaka tribes. Those illustrious heroes of the Kuru, the Vrishni, and the Andaka races passed their days in pleasure and merriment like virtuous men after death in the celestial regions. The Kurus and the Vrishnis, with joyous hearts, amused themselves there, setting up at times loud shouts mingled with clapping of the hands, spending many days in sports and merriment there, and worshipped by the Kurus all the while. The Vrishni heroes, endued with great energy, then returned to the city of Dwardavati. What does that mean by they were worshipped by the Kurus? Yeah, properly taken care of. You know, given full attention and everything like that. Because they're the guests. So they're coming as guests. They're juniors, so they're giving so many presents and the wedding and all that. But as guests, then they're taken care of, you know, completely, fully. Otherwise, how is it there's merriment the whole time? So there's merriment the whole time means you really got to be working out to make that happen. It doesn't just happen, right? You know, you're not sitting there in front of the boob tube and then when your guest walks in, you say, you know, hey, you hungry? Yeah, go something in the fridge. Yeah, like that, you know, like that, you know. Go back to watching, you know, like that. And they have to get their own, like that. So, not like that. It means you take it. You go to the fridge, like that. You sit them down. Give them the remote, right? Then you go to the, you go to the fridge. Give them the remote. Yes. Atiti. What is it? The titi is like God, says, whoa, okay. I mean, that's pretty big, giving them the remote, you know. It's like, yeah, what if they turn on the wrong channel? I was watching Faye. So, like that. So. Okay. I'll move on here. Dwardavati. The great warriors of the Vrishni and Andaka races set out with Rama in the van. Right? So van, what kind of van? Mercedes van? Huh? A combi, right? Maybe an SUV. Maybe it was one of those stretch Humvees, right? You know? Okay. Okay. Carrying with them those gems of the purest rays that had been given them by those foremost ones of Kuru's race. So it means they gave them all kinds of gifts and everything back. All that. Okay. O Bharata, the high-souled Vasudeva remained there with Arjuna in the delightful city of Indraprastha. The illustrious one wandered over the banks of the Jamuna in search of deer. He sported with Arjuna, piercing with his shafts deer and wild boars. Then Subhadra, the favorite sister of Keshava, gave birth to an illustrious son, like Paloma's daughter, the Queen of Heaven, bringing forth Jayanta. Oh, probably Jayanta. Okay, so Paloma's daughter. So that means like a Sati. Not Sati. Sati? Sindhu's wife is Sati? Sachi. Yeah, that's right. Okay. Like, and also, what's her name? Is Draupadi. she is also, you know, an incarnation of Sachi, right? Okay. And oh no, Jayanta means sun. It was illustrious like the queen of Arjuna. And the son that Subhadra brought forth was of long arms, broad chest, and eyes as large as those of a bull. Right? So that means very full, you know, and very piercing. Right? The Kshatriya eyes are very piercing. That's right, it's only the Kshatriya women can really look at them. Right? So that if they can look at them, so how strong are their eyes, right? And that's just, so here, also long arms means long arms. It's not just, these are not just very nicely poetic things. These are actually meant like that, like that. So when they say their arms are down to their knees, it means they are. Just because, you know, an American academic hasn't seen that doesn't mean it doesn't exist. Like that. Very, very important, right? It means if you want to see arms like that, there's a the famous pictures of Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur. You look in there, he's wearing a cashmere sweater that was brought from England, right? So normal size, every, you know, nice, you know, how you say, wasps wears, and it, you know, fits them, right? And also on sweaters, right, there's always that little cuff that you fold back, you know, that's the proper thing, you don't let it out straight, you know? But if you notice on his arms, it's the cuff is undone, it's out straight, and there's another 3 or 4 inches until his wrist. And that's not rolled up. You look at it, it's not creased or anything. It's a formal picture. That's as long as the sleeves are. So what does that mean? That means when it said Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur's arms were down to his knees, it meant they were. That's all. Like that. Does that make sense? Like that. And it doesn't matter how many professors say otherwise, they're all fools. So here, it says that Subhadra's son had arms down to, you know, long arms. So that's what it means. Okay. That hero and oppressor of foes came to be called Abhimanyu, the son of Arjuna, that grinder of foes and bull amongst men, was called Abhimanyu because he was fearless and wrathful. That great warrior was begotten upon the son, daughter of the Satvata race by Dhananjaya, like fire produced in a sacrifice from within the Sami wood by the process of rubbing. Right? Sami, because Sami then represents fertility, right? So that's why it will be mentioned like this. And what is the Sami wood? Do you know what this is?
It's used for making fire.
Yes, the Aruni. The Aruni. It means you churn it, and then from that you get fire. They take that, and then you make the yajna fire. But it can only be done if the consciousness is pure. Otherwise, why would they use this? Right? Because otherwise they would just say, begat a child. But the Aruni, you can churn it all day, and fire won't come. It depends upon the consciousness, like that. Like they had a big yajna many years ago, probably like 15 years ago. Big, big, huge yajna, like that. And all the big Brahmins were there and all this. And I think it was a Smarta yajna. And they started, how you say? So they brought the Aruni, you know, the big Brahmins came, they started the thing, they could get smoke, they couldn't get the fire. And so all of them tried it, and no one could get, like that. And they went to any of the, you know, Brahmins, anything. No, so then at the end, they just ask, you know, is there anyone here from a good family? Like that. So when husband and wife came, they had been fasting the whole time. Like that. You know, very devoted in that. So then they came, they started to fire. So it's all consciousness. So therefore, when it gives this example, it means then the consciousness had to be very good. You're talking about Dhananjaya and Yoga Maya. So, you know, talking about good consciousness here. Okay. Upon the birth of this child, Yudhishthira, the powerful son of Kunti, gave away unto Brahmanas 10,000 cows and coins of gold. The child from his earliest years became the favorite of Vasudeva and of his father and uncles, like the moon of all the people of the world. Upon his birth, Krishna performed the usual rites of infancy. The child began to grow up like the moon of the bright fortnight. What's the bright fortnight? Yes, when it's going towards the full moon. So it means it's growing up like that. It means getting brighter and fuller.
Waxing.
Yeah, waxing. The waxing moon. The grinder of foes soon became conversant with the Vedas and acquired from his father the science of weapon, both celestial and human, consisting of four branches and 10 divisions. Like that. I don't know, I've never heard of the 10 divisions. Okay. Like that. So, as a Kshatriya, then they learn all the Vedas and they learn the martial sciences. Right? Does that make sense? So, that's why in the Gurukul system, everybody learns the Vedas, learns all the puja, the menial service, all the different things that are, you know, how you say, Brahminical and Vaishnav by nature. Then they learn specifically knowledge that's according to their own occupation. Right? So then we see he also followed this. Endued with great strength, the child also acquired the knowledge of counteracting the weapons hurled at him by others, and great lightness of hand and fleetness of motion, forward and backward, transverse and wheeling. Abhimanyu became like unto his father in knowledge of the scriptures and rites of religion. Right? So it's not this that you were just fighting. So therefore this idea that guys always gets angry and just likes to fight does not indicate a Kshatriya. Right? That's called a bouncer. Right? You know, you see him at the front of, you know, discos and bars and stuff like that. Don't mess with them. They're tough like that, you know. But that's not a Kshatriya. Like a Kshatriya may, out of disappointment, you know, take up such a job. But that doesn't mean that, that anybody who does that is that. So we can see here how much he knows in the Shastra. It doesn't just say, the weaponry, the Dhanurveda. It says Shastra. So that's in general. And rites of religion. Because remember before, when the Ulupi episode, then what was Arjuna doing? He was doing yajna. Means he was sitting there and the Brahmins were doing? No, he was doing it himself. The Brahmins set things up, but he was doing the yajna. Dhananjaya, beholding his son, became filled with joy. Like Magavat, beholding Arjuna, the latter beheld his son Abhimanyu and became exceedingly happy. Right? Just like Indra was very happy seeing his son Arjuna, so then Arjuna was happy seeing his son Abhimanyu. Abhimanyu possessed the power of slaying every foe and bore on his person every auspicious mark. He was invisible in battle and broad-shouldered as the bull. Possessing a broad face as the hood of a snake, he was proud like the lion. Wielding a large bow, his prowess was like that of an elephant in rut. Possessed of a face handsome as the full moon, and of a voice deep as the sound of the drum or the clouds, he was equal unto Krishna in bravery and energy, in beauty and in features. The auspicious Panchali also, from her five husbands, obtained sons, all of whom were heroes of the foremost rank, and immovable in battle like the hills. Why would now, right after description of Abhimanyu, would we describe Draupadi's sons?
Because if they describe only Subhadra's son, it would be kind of like unfair.
Yes, it would be unfair.
And it would be like, wouldn't be so balanced there.
Yes, it wouldn't be balanced, right? Otherwise, then, you know, she'll feel bad about it. And also others will think, well, what about her? You know, like that. So then immediately, well, you know, you're hearing about the son, so that's nice, but as soon as that's done, immediately you go into then explaining hers. Like that. Right? So this is the point, is that if one has knowledge, that's good. One has realization, then one can remain. Does that make sense? Right? You caught it? No, you didn't. That was an example of means the difference between the Upakarvana and the Naishtika. Prativinda, so the sons of Draupadi, Prativinda by Yudhishthira, Sutta Soma by Vrikodara, Shuta Karma by Arjuna, Satanika by Nakula, and Shuta Sena by Sahadev. These were the five heroes and great warriors that Panchali brought forth, like Aditi bringing forth the Adityas. The Brahmanas, from their knowledge, right, who are the Adityas?
Sons of Aditi?
Yes, 12 sons of Aditi. And what do they do? What's their job?
Yeah. They come in the position of the sun god.
Yeah. Each one of them for 1 month is the sun god. So from Sankranti to Sankranti, then one of the Adityas is the sun god. Then the next month and it changes. Like that. So in other words, to say these sons were like the Adityas, then was, you know, very special.
Like, why is Surya referred to as the sun god?
The sun god, because it is the, you have the president. So who was the president? Was Washington or was Lincoln? Maybe it was Eisenhower was the president. Or
Bush.
Which, senior or junior? The Bushman. Like that. So then, you understand? Or maybe it was Carter, you know, maybe it was. So, which one is the president? Right? Does that make sense? Yeah? Okay. The Brahmanas, from their foreknowledge, said unto Yudhishthira that as the son of his would be capable of bearing, like the Vindhya mountains, the weapons of the foe, he should be called Prativindhya. Right? And so now he's giving why his son was called that. Right? Because Vindhya is the mountains. Like the Vindhya mountains can carry anything, so then therefore he can deal with any foe. And because the child that Draupadi bore to Bhimsena was born after Bhima had performed 1,000 soma sacrifices, he came to be called Suta Soma. Because Arjuna's son was born upon his return from exile, which he had achieved many celebrated feats, that child came to be called Shuta Karman. When Nakula named his son Satanika after a royal sage of that name in the illustrious race of Kuru. Again, the son that Draupadi bore to Sahadeva was born under the constellation called Vahini Daivata, Kritika. Right, you know Kritika? So one just after Rohini, this had many, many stars. Therefore, he was called after the generalissimo of the celestial host. Oh, okay, Kritika is the generalissimo. Okay. Kritika. Yeah. Okay, that's Kartikeya. Yeah, because, okay. Shrutasena, oh yeah, called Shrutasena Kartikeya. The sons of Draupadi were born, each at the interval of 1 year, and all of them became renowned and much attached to one another. O monarch, all their rites of infancy and childhood, such as the Chudakarna and Upanayanam, were performed by Domya according to the ordinance. All of them of excellent behavior and vows, after having studied the Vedas, acquired from Arjuna a knowledge of all the weapons, celestial and human. And, O tiger amongst kings, the Pandavas, having obtained sons, all of whom were equal unto the children of the celestials, and endued with broad chests, and all of whom became great warriors, were filled with joy. Okay, so then we end that section. We'll stop for today. We'll continue tomorrow. Om Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Srila Prabhupada ki. Yeah.